And thanks again to everyone who has read. I'll just open the meeting and take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. And warm welcome to any visitors to us this evening. There aren't any in the room, but let it be known, newcomers are more than welcome here. So we warmly welcome them too. Okay, so we are a speaker meeting, and it is going to fall on me to introduce our speaker tonight. I met this person on my little jolly up over to Berlin back in May. We were introduced by a friend of mine. I said, talk to this lady. I know that you'll have lots in common. And there we were, right? And it turned out to be absolutely true. We have common kind of connections in a couple of places in the States. And we've both been involved in the same kind of service over the last few years. And that's really interesting. But we got on really well. And I recently asked her if she'd like to come and share with us. So without further ado, I'll introduce you to Linda, who's come along tonight to share her experience, strength and hope with us for the next 40 or 45 minutes, whatever she's comfortable with. It's nice to get someone here from a country. I don't believe we've ever had a speaker from Holland before in our meeting, so that's really nice. That's always a good thing to get something new and different. So without further ado, Linda, I'm going to ask you to jump in and share with us. The floor is yours. Thank you and welcome.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
Hi, guys. I'm grateful recovering editor. My name is Linda. I'm from
Hello,
the Netherlands.
Hello, Linda. Welcome.
Hey, Linda. Welcome. Yeah.
Thank you. Hi.
Thank you for coming.
As Steve said, I'm from the Netherlands, and we met in Berlin. Awesome. Steve, thank you for the invite. Someone once told me, if you're invited to speak, except when it's geographical, not possible, you never say no. Well, with technology these days, it's hard to find a place where it's geographical, not possible, except face-to-face. So here I am. My clean date is September 2nd, 2011. I never prepare what I am going to say because I'm letting my heart speak, guided by my higher power. I did that once. That brought me a lot of stress. It's easier to just sit, and when it's time, you know. So I will tell you a little bit about where I came from. I'm 57. I grew up in a dysfunctional family. And as a kid, I didn't understand that life, that family. And I always talked to my God, just dumped it up there, always. And I questioned my higher power. Did I end up in the wrong family? What went wrong? Where's my older brother? I couldn't find him. I had a younger brother. When I was four, the first emotion that I felt in my life was grief and being homesick. Homesick to something that was warm, loving, and unconditional. And grief from not finding my older brother, because in my mind, I thought, hey, he was supposed to go first, then I was going to go. So I asked my mom when I was four, and the answer was that I was not allowed to say crazy stuff. I had a younger brother. I was totally flabbergasted. So what I felt was weird, right? It was crazy. So a year later, I had the guts to ask again, Mom, where's my older brother? Knowing she was going to say the same thing. So when she said, you have a younger brother and don't say crazy stuff, I said, yeah, Mom, I know. But that's not what I mean. I really mean my older brother. And I pointed to my heart. I said, because it hurts so bad and I miss him so much. Well, same answer. Long story short, until I was 12, I walked around in a bubble, lonely, misunderstood, not being heard on any level. I wasn't allowed to think what I thought, that had to be different. I wasn't allowed to see stuff like I saw it. I should see it differently, do things differently, and so on, which is probably familiar to a lot of us. When I was 12, I came home from school, and she was with a friend having a cup of tea. And I overheard a conversation that friend had a miscarriage, and I heard my mom say, I know what it is, because before Linda was born, I lost a baby boy with 6 months pregnancy. And I'm a very expressive person, but I imploded. I was so pissed off that I doubted myself so much that from that moment on, I lost that feeling of homesickness. I just became an angry person. If she said go left, I would go right, even if it was a dangerous road or whatever. So not long after that, when I was 15, I got introduced to my drug of choice. And from the first time using, it was the first time in my life that I had a feeling of belonging, because I was allowed to be, and with kindred spirits, right? So I have a lot of physical limitations and chronic pain, because when I was 10, I fell down from a meter and a half high on the bottom of my spine. So in the last 35 years, I crawled around for 22 of them. I had 2 periods of walking without help, a piece, a cane, or whatever, 1 5 years, 1 7 years. So when I was 22 and I went down, well, I'm skipping a part, let me tell you. I fell in love when I was like 20, really bad, and this guy wanted me to stop using. And I didn't see the harm in it, right? So he gave me an ultimatum. And the day of the ultimatum, he walked in and he said, okay, so we're done. I got so heartbroken that within 2 weeks, I put my nose in different kinds of dope, which was crazy, because from day one, I used 6 days a week. I ate one day, slept one day, and went on. After 6 months, I thought, okay, my mom needs to know I'm alive. I fell asleep on her couch, and I went cold turkey from sleeping to the fridge, sleeping to the fridge. And I knew, don't ever touch it again, because it's going to kill you. But I didn't connect it to addiction or my drug of choice, because here in Holland, we could buy that in a shop. So when I, after like 6 months, I thought, I need to get out of here, because I'm here with her again, not being allowed to be who I am. So I thought, okay, well, you guys all heard people, places, and things. We just forget we take ourselves. So I went to the United States. I went to Fort Lauderdale, Florida as a nanny. So I had a roof over my head. And within 2 weeks, somebody offered me my drug of choice. Yay! Awesome. So after my year, my visa was expired, I thought, hey, hell, I ain't going home. Fuck that shit, but I ain't going home. And I was also introduced to another substance. So I figured, what the fuck? I'm just not going to go home. But my workplace ended. So by that time, I had some friends and knew some people. So I became a roommate of 2 American girls. And I went working in tabletop dancing. So I could support myself. And one weekend, they were gone. And I thought, well, I can bring the TV to the pawn shop. I will have it back by Sunday afternoon. All your mics are off, but I can hear you laughing. Because probably recognition, you know what's coming. So Monday morning, I got pulled out of my bed by four cops. I was arrested for theft, and I went to jail. I was 22. Long blonde hair, skinny young girl, and it was scary as shit. You know, orange jumpsuit, 32 women in a cell block, and immigration put a hold on me because that visa expired, right? So I've spent 3.5 weeks in jail, and our prison system over here is you have a TV and you can, you know, it's like a fucking hotel. I was 22 and I was scared shitless. So then I got, went to immigration. I spent 3 months there before my flight home. And my brother picked me up. And I knew back then because I went cold turkey again, don't ever touch that shit again because it's gonna kill you, Linda. So my brother picked me up from Amsterdam airport and I said, please drive to the shop first before we go home. It didn't connect. So not long after that, I had no strength in this body anymore. I've crawled around for 6.5 years while my friends were in a stage where they would meet somebody, get married, children. I wanted three children, but my life was over before it began. So all I could do was use. Took me 6.5 years to find one of the three doctors back then in my country to be able to fixate the back. Then, going a little forward, with every trauma I've been through, like when I was going cold turkey on my mom's couch, I was actually abused by an uncle that would feed me my baby food when I was younger, you know. He was one of the few men that I trusted, but I couldn't defend myself. So I had a lot of trauma, a lot of therapy because, you know, my self-esteem was killed when I asked my mother where that older brother was. So I got back on my feet. I went back to school for a couple years. And I was 28 when I had that surgery, 30 when I was done rehabilitating, and 32 when I had to buy a cane. I mean, at 35... I had so much nerve pain that my muscle strength was so undermined, I couldn't lift my toothbrush anymore. So I started using more and more and more. And I went to a pain polyclinic. And because I had this fall vertically, my whole spine was screwed. I had bulging discs from a centimeter plus. So he started burning those discs. And those were really procedures from hell. But 8 years later, 15 procedures, I was walking without a cane with my dogs outside again. And 3 months later, I became victim of a very bad car crash. That took me, I had to move. I couldn't stay in my house. It cost me 5 years and 6 surgeries. After that, I thought, okay, well, now I've had it all done, I'm going to have that nose bone fixed. So did that. Exactly 1 month later, my gallbladder had to come out because for 2 years I've been suffering gallstone attacks, which I have so much physical pain. I need to have a lot of pain before I figure out that it might be too much. So another fellow friend from our fellowship said, I've been in the hospital and they took my gallbladder out. said, well, what symptoms did you have? And he told me, and I said, that's what I've got. I've been doing those things like a woman in labor on the floor in the street for 2 years. So, okay. That was fixed. Exactly 1 month later, 31 days, I was standing behind a couple of cars at a stop sign. And I didn't see it coming, and somebody just drove in my rear full speed. Unbelievable. When I hear myself tell this, I think, wow, it is. So it took me 3 years to recover from that, which I, you know, I still have some. When there's too much stimulation, I cannot drive a car with a radio on and talking to somebody. But that's fine. So again, I came back on my feet. And then twice by that time when I was just moved from that car accident, I was in my rock bottom already. That started after my dad died 17 years ago. Because he was my buddy. And after I moved, it became crazy. You know, Steve has met me. I'm a very loving, warm-hearted person. And if somebody knocks on my door, which I don't know, and say, I need help, I'm the first one to help you. So all I could do was curse, scream. Fought on the street with a couple of people because they said, your dogs are barking. Yeah, there are no rabbits, was my answer. And I would put my cane in your neck because then I can run really fast. And I went to my doctor, my GP, and I said, listen, I know and all my medical specialists know that I use something which everybody understands, but one thing is really wrong. I don't tell you the amounts, and they're out of proportion. And I need to come clean with that. You know, I need to cut back to medical acceptable standards. So I told my doctor, and I started to cut back. And after 13 months going crazy, I was on half of my use. And one morning, I had to cut back on my morning use. So for an hour and a half, I would be pissed off looking at my clock when it was time for me to allow myself the moment of use. And one morning, it was summer, it was June, I think, like this time. I sat outside by my kitchen door in the sun, and out loud, I asked myself, okay, Linda, what the fuck do you want? You want to go on using for another 30 years? Nope, because I don't have a life. You want to keep cutting back for another 13 months? I said, nope, that's not an option either. Okay, so what's left? You know, I have this discussion out loud with myself. And then I knew it was all or nothing. And that was my moment of acknowledging I had a fucking addiction problem big time. I went back to my doctor. I said, I can't do this anymore. I have a problem. I'm going to have myself admitted to rehab as far away as I can. And to a country where I'm too scared to walk off in the street when I'm resistant with my good English and I'm capable of getting a bus to a big city. So I went to South Africa to a rehab clinic. And in the week before, I told myself, okay, Linda, you don't know anymore. You're going to accept everything from everybody else knows better than you, and you're going to take it, because this is just the start of breaking patterns. The shit show will become when you get back home. So you're going to take everything out of it. Which I did. I was there for a weekend. The boss of that rehab came to me. He says, if everybody would be so motivated as you, they would all make it. Well, that was, I don't know, going on 12 years ago. I picked up one white chip, and that was it. My first time that I heard of Narcotics Anonymous was in Cape Town. We had to go to meetings. That first meeting, I walked in there. There were 80, 90 recovering addicts having fun and being warm and loving and laughing. And that was the second time in my life I felt home. I was home. My last week of rehab, I had an ear infection. So they told me, you don't have to go to that meeting. I said, hell yeah, I'm going to that meeting, because they didn't have any key hangers anymore. So I could connect with people there, the South African people, and somebody was bringing me theirs. Which, when you just come in, those that white one and the orange one, it's like, geez, there wasn't a better prize in life. So when I came home, the first thing I did was look up a meeting from Narcotics Anonymous. I went there, started doing service. I found a sponsor. I hate writing. I have ADHD, right? Well, we know now the name of that shit. I loved the school when I was a kid. Writing on the board, that was fun, and, you know, in the classroom. But as soon as they gave me homework, I was out. Not my thing. But I heard a lot in meetings, I'm so scared of change. I'm so scared of change. And I thought, huh? I'm only scared of one. And that stuff is not going to change. That freaked me out. Meanwhile, you heard the doorbell. Thank you. And I thought, I'm so scared. Stuff is not going to change because, you know, my life is not fun. So I did everything. I did that step work because I didn't want to take the chance and leave something out. I know I had an incurable, deadly disease. And all that my disease wanted is to kill me slow, painful as possible. So I did service, started service, coffee, greeting, every service there is, except for, we call it the secretary, the one that makes the minutes, because I don't like writing. I did everything. I went to area meetings, and I thought, geez, what kind of language is this that these guys speak? I thought, it sounds like Chinese, you know, a little Robert's Rules of Order talk, and what? When I was 8 years clean, the chairperson position of my area came free, and I volunteered. And somebody asked me, what's your motivation to want to do this service? I said, well, I find it challenging for me as a very opinionated person to keep my fucking opinion with me. Because I love to grow, you know? I love the person that I am today. And that's because you guys loved me until I started loving myself. And I like myself. I can say I love myself, not every day, every minute, but overall I do. And I became a service junkie because it's so cool. So I became the first workshop coordinator from my country when we started to set up PR Committee and FD. And that's why I met Steve, why I was in Berlin at those European service learning days for all those workshops. And after 5 years, we're going to have a convention this coming week again, finally. And I got a very humbling experience over the last year, because I got the trust from my fellow addicts to be chair of programming, which is fucking huge. I'm in a committee with 32 people, and there's not been one fight yet. That's crazy. That's really crazy, right? And we put down a program which is so awesome. It's the biggest program we've ever had, because you grow as a country too. And so I'm not enjoying the sun today. I was laminating floor mats, and I do it with love, because I can see without looking in the mirror when I talk about my service and carrying out that message for Narcotics Anonymous to a still sick and suffering addict. I start beaming. You know, I'm radiant. I spoke in a meeting a couple months ago, and there was a girl, she had 30 days clean. She came up to me with tears in her eyes, and she said, "I want to thank you so much, Linda. You gave me hope." Well, guys, I'll take it. You know, I'll fucking take it. I want to tell you about my mom. My mom lives in Spain, and before I got clean, I hadn't seen her for 7 years. When I started writing my step four, I wrote that list, and the first name on the list was my mom. And I had nightmares that night, and I woke up ready to kill somebody. And then I knew, and again, I do this shit out loud. I'm like a soap opera, if you can see me by myself here. I said, okay, I need to go do some trauma therapy, because, you know, I need to start forgiving. And I've learned in Narcotics Anonymous that forgiving somebody is not the same as saying, hey, what you did was okay. No, it's saying, I love myself enough that I deserve that space in my heart. So I did. And I forgave her. And when I did, I could see also the good things that I had in my youth, the good things she did. And I blamed her for all the shit she never taught me, you know, dealing with emotions and just being who you are and being okay with it. And I realized how crooked that is, because, you know, to put it in a metaphor, I blamed her that she was a butcher, and I wanted her to be a baker. That's crazy. Totally fucked up crazy. And my mom never learned to deal with emotions. So, of course, she said to me when I was 4, don't say crazy things. Because if she would have said, your older brother's back in heaven, the healing process should have started for her. But she would go past emotions as fast as lightning. So 2 months after I forgave her, my mom's on the phone, crying. She was here in Holland at her friend's house. And I heard from your niece what you did for yourself, and I'm so proud of you, and I'm so happy that you're doing good. And I'm going back home tomorrow, and I really would like to drink a cup of coffee with you. And guys, still, when I think back on that moment on the phone, there was not one nano thing in my entire being of like, oh shit, I was Miss Serenity herself, which is really crazy for me and my personality. And I heard myself say, well, you got to do that today then, right? And she was shocked. Like, oh, can I come? I said, sure you can come. So she was careful. She said, well, I will not bother you then really long. I said, well, you don't think I'm going to give you more than one cup of coffee? Because humor is so healing. So my mom came with her best friend, which is one of her friends that I've always really appreciated. And she said, I heard you wrote a life story. You want to share that with us? I said, no. You got to understand, in my life story, I spilled my guts. That has no added value. And she wanted to start apologizing for stuff. And I said, Mom, listen, maybe someday we will talk about this. But now is not that time. And as far as I'm concerned, let me say one thing. I made a lot of mistakes in my life, and I don't want to be held accountable for them for the rest of my life. And that goes for you too. You are 21 years old with a business of your own, a husband that was never there, two children, and never learned to deal with shit yourself. So for me, I'm happy to move forward from today and build a bond with you. And she looked at me like I was from outer space, because she doesn't know me like that. So I went to Spain a couple months later just to, you know, figure out how we would be with old patterns, because I'm learning new behaviors, but she didn't. Let me tell you, my mom is one of my best friends. We speak at least twice a week. And yeah, sometimes old patterns pop up. But now I can walk away, stay calm. And then the next day I will say to her, Mom, can we talk about this? I want to really get back to what happened last night. No, it's okay, Lynn. It's okay, it's fine, because she's still doing what she always did. I don't want to feel emotions. I don't want to talk about him. I don't want to have difficult stuff. I said, well, that's fine. You don't need to talk about it, but are you willing to listen to me, what's important for me to express? Yeah, sure. And I've learned to talk from me, not you did or what. Blah, blah. And then she will start crying, which is one thing she hates. I don't want to cry. And now I have the ability and opportunity to tell my mom, put an arm around her and say, Mom, it's okay to cry. It's an honest emotion. It's okay. So now it happens a lot of times when she finds difficult stuff, she talks to me because it's safe with me to cry. What the fuck? Narcotics Anonymous did this for me. Okay, I had to put in some footwork, and I will keep putting in footwork because, you know, hey, doesn't come for free. But even with all my pain and now two arthritic hips, it's worth it. And everything I've been through made me the woman I am today. And I'm very grateful for that, you know? I have no words for what Narcotics Anonymous means to me. It's, you know, the people I meet. My niece got married in, and she lived in Israel. So through people, I started asking around. I need to go to a meeting in Tel Aviv Because, hey, when I'm somewhere, I want to go to meet the local fellowship, right? So on the most important holiday in Israel, where there's 24 hours, no traffic, I walked, like all the Israelis do, in the middle of Tel Aviv on the street, towards a bomb shelter to go to a meeting. I was the first one there, so I helped set up the meeting. I had some Dutch black keytacks and a couple white ones with me. So cool to see, like in those countries, that you see these rabbi guys, you see Western guys, and there was a girl that picked up 30 days, so I started with my share by handing her over a white Dutch keytag, and everybody started crying. So no matter where I go in the world, I have family, I have places to stay. Because you're my brothers from other mothers and my sisters from other mothers, you know. I say sometimes, which is really true, my mom gave birth to me. You guys, you gave me life, a valuable life. Because even though that, because of my physical shit, I cannot work, I am a productive member of society because I'm doing service for Narcotics Anonymous, carrying the message. I'm trying not to cry when I hear myself say it, because it's in the core of my whole being, I live, breathe Narcotics Anonymous. I never wanted to become a sponsor. My sponsor would laugh when I would say that. Hell no, I've got enough of my own shit. He would just laugh. Well, I became a sponsor, thankfully. Because it's really cool to work with people, with women that want to do this work, that want a different way of life, that give you the faith and the trust to follow your suggestions. You know, I've been on the phone with my sponsor a million times in the beginning when I would have raised one eyebrow and thinking, what the fuck did that bitch just say for me to do? But I would do it. There was one guy that he just couldn't handle me. We're both strong people. We were young in recovery, dominant. And he would be nasty to me. So I talked to my sponsor about it. And she said, well, go to him and talk it through. Communication is the key. Love is the answer. I tried 3 fucking times. He would just ignore me and say, nope, not interested. Okay, so then one time we had a Christmas event. My sponsor was there. He was there. And she said, how did it go the last time that you were going to go talk it out with him? Because I never heard you back on it. I said, well, he just told me again, he's not interested. She says, well, then you're going to try it again. I said, are you crazy? 3 times is enough. She says, well, he's here. What are you waiting for? I said, are you crazy? I said, it's fucking Christmas. She says, yeah, so what? And she kept repeating it every time that I resisted it. Yeah, so what? She says, I need to go in like 15 minutes and I'm not leaving before you've done it. I thought, oh shit, here we go. I went up to him. We talked it out. Unbelievable. We talked it out. And then I didn't see this guy for 3 years. And then there was a new meeting in the afternoon. So I was going to go to that meeting and I walk in. And there he was. And we walked up to each other, hugged each other, and we both, right. He's one of my best friends. He lives in Berlin, by the way, and he took me to the airport. I would have said in my former life, hey, fuck you, drop that. Not my problem. So, you know, that by listening and following suggestions from which I think, Jesus, are you serious? But I have so much to gain in growth and in being who I'm allowed to be tomorrow. So I'm not scared of fear, because fear is only good for one thing, to transform to faith. And as long as I don't want to do it, I will not get that much repetition of certain themes and patterns. And I see that I've reached about 40 minutes, so I'll wrap it up. And now I'm here with you guys today, people who I don't know, but I do love. And if nobody told you they loved you today, I just did. There's not a fucking thing you can do about it, because you guys gave me life. And I'm grateful for my mom, who gave me birth, and for all the shit that I went through to be who I was allowed to become. And I'll leave it there. Thank you guys so much for listening to me and allowing me to speak.